Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Another management casualty, and thankfully this week we've got plenty of fuel in the tank. It's a time to start episode 22 of the Premier Non-League Podcast.
The Premier Non-League Podcast.
Good evening, boys and girls. Well, I say boys, not girls. I don't know who's girly in here. I don't know if we've ever had a girl on here, but Trev, Gaz, how are we doing tonight, guys? You all right? The Southerners?
Yes, good.
All good, thank you.
And the Northerner, Chris, you all right, mate? How are we doing?
Okay, thank you.
Not good bad to see. Pete's on a date night tonight, so he's been all lovey-dovey, which I think he is a softy deep down, but he's using it as an excuse to get out of this one tonight, which I'm surprised because we've got a lot to cover tonight in the next hour or so. Management casualties, politically correctness stuff, referee stuff, moves and FA Cups and trophies. It's all going off in non-league, but we haven't had any postponements, thankfully, for a while. It's annoyed me, guys, though, because of these postponements and like Worthing's lack of progress in cups has cost me like a couple of opportunities for me to see football this month on a limited chance. So it's frustrating. We've missed it. I don't even think Trev's gone to any over the last couple of weeks. I know you've been to Barnet on Saturday, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Dover Saturday, didn't I?
Yeah, so yeah, you got something. Chaps, I mean, Chris, it's been all right up north for you, hasn't it? Because of you haven't had these Muppets eating up all the fuel. But not a good result for Shields on Saturday, though, was it?
Well, it's been, we've had all the games that we've been scheduled to play. We've played, we've got one point out of a possible nine, so it's been positively disastrous.
So you wish there had been a postponement for Fuel then?
Not at all.
And in other news, I guess you're definitely the poorer club of the North East now, with the Magpies getting all excited over their Premier League winning ambitions now.
Yes, to be fair, and to be quite honest, I haven't really watched much or read much about it. I've got no interest at all. That kind of level of football is kind of passing me by at this moment. Not just because it's Newcastle, but just that level. It's just not part of my. It's not on my radar at the moment.
It's kind of one of those things, though. It's a lot of, I mean, it makes me laugh that all the other 19 clubs are apparently all peed off with it and it shouldn't have been approved. But then you've got clubs like City in there. You've got like, how are they even allowed to even say anything like that? You know, look where they were when they got takeover. Look at Chelsea and, you know, all that. But it's how expensive it's coming. And you know for a fact they'll improve the ground, the prices will go up even more. And, you know, and if they don't start getting results, they'll start calling for those owners out like they always do.
Absolutely. They're in the relegation zone and, you know, we were coming up towards not too far away from the January transfer window, but you know they're never going to get Champions League football next year. So the players who they might have attracted will want Champions League football.
What do you mean they're not getting Mbappe? Because I thought that was a given.
Well done. It's a nailed on certainty, isn't it? The problem is it's how you entice footballers to come to the northeast of England. So it's not London. It's not Manchester, it's not the Northwest, it's the Northeast. And historically, it's been difficult to get people to the Northeast. So they're probably really going to have to burst the bank. Well, I suppose I say burst the bank, probably put a little bit of a pin in a massive cushion and pay way, way over the odds to get the players they want. But again, as I say, I'm not too bothered about it, really. Let them get on with it.
I think the difference is with this one is that people expect it results imminently. And it's not Man City. What was it? Was it 15 years ago? Can't remember. Yeah, but sort of, there wasn't a sort of outrage on social media as much back then. So, you know, they had a bit more time. But I can imagine if they don't start getting results imminently, they'll be kicking off big time.
They'll probably end up with, like, you know, the management merry-go-round that we see at Watford, you know.
No, that's a joke as well.
Yeah, but it just kind of, what's going on, it just reaffirms my desire for non-league football, honest football.
Well, I was going to say, it does. It does give us that. That's one of the main reasons why us four here, at least, we all support, you know, obviously league clubs, and you know, we do follow professional football on the TV. But you know, it gives you that natural love for it, because you know, I've said many times, Charlton were in the Premier League for, you know, for majority of the 2000s, and it was starting to get expensive towards the end of it. But Christ, like, I'd hate to think how much it will be if we end up getting back there again. I mean, you, Trevor, you've seen with being a Spurs fan, you know, the Tottenham Stadium, you know, how expensive tickets are there, even for the tours. And, you know, lovely stadium. I know you've got to pay it back somehow, but, you know, gone are the sort of things, which is why we're down at this level and we enjoy it so much.
We've harped on, haven't we, the last couple of weeks about, you know, clubs pricing sensibly to get fans in, and attendance levels being really good at these levels. You know, you would hope as well that maybe the effects of the last 16, 17 months have pushed people down a little bit, and, you know, they're going where they can afford to go, but they're actually putting more money into these clubs because they probably would have spent it at a Premier League club, but they're getting a better return, you know, for their pound notes.
You don't need to talk to me about pricing, because I'm pretty sure you've heard enough about it the last few weeks, and yeah. I'm apparently not in people's good books, apparently, so there we go.
Well, just to really, really compound matters, the happy hours are back in at South Shields as well. So
there you go, mate. There you go. Did they listen and hear it and stuff like that? Because it's certain. Well, I'm not going to get into it because it's a bit of a touchy subject. So
not only are the programmes being dropped in price, happy hours are in.
It's brilliant because, when are they doing the happy hours?
An hour before the game. And yeah. So it's normally 1:30 to 2:30, I think. And then it was between 5 and 6, but on Saturday it was between either 6:45 and 7:45 or 7:45 because of the England game. So there you go. Food for thought.
Food for thought, indeed. Yeah, I mean, fair play to South Shields for that. But let's get back to it. We've had a bit more. We'll go back to South Shields and their performances and all the local stuff in a little bit. But so, first kill a couple of weeks ago. Now Phil Brown. So the big names cut out for non-league football, because it's seeming. I don't really think, as Trev said earlier on WhatsApp, well, to me on WhatsApp, has there been many like managers that have made it at this level from being a big name manager recently? Because Phil Brown and Southend are having an absolute mare right now.
I don't think he was right to come back last year to try and stop them going down. He's got, you know, Phil Brown's got a good reputation in the game, right the way up to managing Hull in the Premier League, and that infamous team talk he did on the pitch one afternoon. Funny enough, I was having a chat with a couple of other people on Twitter this morning about, you know, club legends going back to clubs. Thinking they can, you know, almost be the, you know, the saviour, the messiah, and then end up tarnishing the memory that you've got of them because it all goes Pete Tong. And I thought Brown would actually step away in the summer when he couldn't keep him up, because I think, you know, maybe some of it was tongue-in-cheek, but a lot of their fans in the National League group I'm in on Facebook thought they were going to absolutely walk it. You know, you look at Barnet, you look at Chesterfield, you take Wrexham, 14 years at this level they've been able to get up. Barnet and Chesterfield came down together, what did we come down about 3-4 years ago? And neither of us yet have shown any signs of going back up. It is that tough to get out of, and you've got to have the metal to be able to do it at this level. And just because you're a name in the game means absolutely nothing these days.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things wrong at Southend at the moment anyway. I mean, from someone that I know, his girlfriend supports Southend, and she was saying last season, like, I mean, it was no surprise they went down, and they obviously massively kicked off, what was it, they were trying to get a reprieve for something about getting relegated last season they were doing.
Yeah, weren't they?
I can't remember what it was they were trying to talk about, legal action something.
Yeah, their man Grimsby were both going to kick off, weren't they? I think it was because there was no relegation out of the National League into the North and South. they didn't think they should have.
They're clutching at straws.
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, yeah, it's a tough league, but what's gone so wrong for Phil Brown? Because he is, as you say, a well-respected manager. I mean, I always remember his dressing down of the players at Hull when they were in the Premier League all those years ago and like marching, finger-pointing at them on the pitch at half-time when they're playing poor. But what is it so wrong? Because how are the players they've got, how are they not performing?
I thought their summer recruitment wasn't too bad. You know, the players have signed Reece Murphy from Yeovil, is a 20-goal-a-season striker. James Dunn, who a lot of people didn't like at Barnet last year, but, you know, I quite like him for the job he does, and he does do just a simple job. Sits in front of the back four, screens it, plays the pass out. That's all he does. He's not a box-to-box midfielder. You know, and I thought a fairly decent signing. The couple of others they made as well, but in some of these games, you've got to go horses for courses. You can't pick the same 11, the same formation, play the same way and expect to win games all the way through. The likes of James Rowe, what he's doing up at Chesterfield, Luke Garrard at Boreham Wood, and also Darryl McMahon at Dagenham, although they're having a bit of a blip. You can't always pick the same 11 to go out, not just because you've got players with injuries and stuff like that, but, you know, there is different ways that you win games in the National League. And I don't think Phil Brown could find a way to do it. I know he changed it up last Tuesday against Eastleigh and picked up 3 points. And then again this weekend, I know they had Chesterfield at home, who are, you know, pretty phenomenal, I think. One of my tips for the title anyway. But they just blew him away. You know, and again, you've just got to look at who you are and how you set up. It's not the Football League, you know, and you go to places, no disrespect to Altrincham's, the Wokings and the Dovers of this world. You don't get those kind of stadiums in the Football League, but you've got to go there, you've got to mix it, and that's how you've got to get results.
It's funny though, because it's like you look at teams like Hartlepool, as Chris would be quite aware of them being in the North East. You know, they sort of went down, they didn't get out obviously for a long time until this season, the playoffs just gone. You just look throughout the football spectrum. People do take teams for granted. You see how hard it is. You look at how many teams are sort of former Premier League teams are stuck in League One. You know, it's just people take it for granted. They think, oh, they'll be back up next season. Something goes Pete Tong and it don't work.
You have to, when you go down levels, you have to regroup. It's probably different styles of play. And in terms of Phil Brown, you know, if you remember, he's from the Sam Allardyce school. And I think the same could be said for Sam Allardyce when you say, well, maybe their style is a little bit outdated. You know, the game evolves a little. And if your style of play doesn't move with the evolvement, you can be left behind slightly. Maybe that's it. Yeah. Maybe he's been slightly naive, thinking that he would automatically be good enough for that level. Who knows? But the irony is, Phil is a South Shields lad. You know, he grew up yards from where I'm speaking to you from this evening. So he's well known around these parts.
Who knows? He could be your manager in the future. He seems to be dropping and dropping. But then you're rising and rising. So
by the time we look for a new manager,
here we go. We'll be in the Championship. Yeah, yeah.
No, not at all.
Do you think Phil Brown would have gone in the summer if it hadn't have been for COVID and the lack of fans in grounds and that sort of thing?
Maybe.
I don't think so. I mean, I think he could have walked away. I think he had something like six to eight games last year, I think, to save them. It wasn't many. They were pretty much gone anyway. It was like a little bit last throw of the dice. And I think it was a bit of a, what's their owner? Ron Martin, is it? You know, I think it's the last throw of the dice of someone that the fans know, respect and that. And I think, you know, him dragging the club down off the pitch as well, and being that maybe a little bit naive that you need someone that's going to, you know, work that level and keep him Phil Brown. I think he's, you know, I don't, you know, maybe, you know, Martin as well hadn't helped by going right, you know, fresh broom, absolutely everyone out. We start again rather than keeping with the same. And, you know, I can, you can look at a couple of the other clubs as well when they've gone you know, when they've come down, it's worked for Grimsby. They kept Paul Hurst. They're flying high at the top end of the table, but, you know, off the pitch, they're in a better shape than what Southend are. But Chesterfield, you know, prime example. I think Jack Lester was there when they, no, he wasn't when they came down. It was Ian Everett, who then went to Barrow and took Barrow back up the other way while Chesterfield almost went out the other end. But it'd be interesting to see who they get in. Stan Collymore's offered his services for free today. And yeah, I did put on Twitter another person that, you know, great, he's a club legend, but he doesn't know the level, you know, and, you know, what's he going to bring to the table? Is he going to be any better than having Phil Brown? You know, there's plenty of managers out there that know this level, that need, that can stabilise the ship at the very least. You know,
just having a look at the odds on the next Barnet and the next Southend manager, and Darren Curry is evens.
Trev's friend. He lives down the road from Southend as well.
Have you had any top tips? Have you been in touch with him? I mean, obviously, he probably wouldn't. He'd keep his cards close to his chest.
Well, I said to him Saturday, I said, "Where are you going, Southend, Chesterfield?" And he went, "No, that'd be too obvious, obviously, with what was going on." But I expected him to go to that literally to catch up with Scott Loach, the Chesterfield goalkeeper who he had at Barnet. And I know they speak quite regularly as well. Obviously, Brown got the sack straight after the game Saturday. But I know Darren is quite keen to keep himself away from situations where there's a managerial vacancy to, you know, not put pressure inside the stadium during that game. We did try to get him to Barnet the weekend after Kewell had gone. Although we were talking about it before Harry had got the sack. But again, he decided in the end not to go because, you know, you put him inside the stadium and to start thinking, oh, is he coming back, or, you know, that sort of thing. So
again, it's one of those things, as you say, it leaves a long question, is should managers go back if they've had the glory days? Should they go back? Because I don't think it's ever really the same. It's like I look at, you know, right, you guys obviously know I'm a Cheltenham fan, and everyone keeps calling for Alan Kirbyshee to come back when Nigel Atkins, managed for like 10, 12 years. Mm. Why? Just a bit of nostalgia for me. Don't do it. I want someone that's, I mean, we look at Nigel Atkins. He's a good guy. He's a good manager, but is he from that old school, as Chris was saying, that he was successful 10, 12 years ago when he got Southampton through the leagues back to the Premier League, but is he modernised with a lot of these younger managers? And you think, I don't even know, as much as I love the bloke, I don't think he'd give it up anyway. But someone like Chris Powell, I think he's quite happy being an England coach and a Spurs coach right now. And I think he's met his match. And, you know, maybe in the future he might move up the ranks at Spurs or something if something went, you know, if he really shone. But I think, you know, why do people want the nostalgia? Is it just an easy way out, do you think?
I think it's like, you look at what the Barnet nostalgia as well with Martin Allen. That's probably one that's quite a famous one, isn't it, within non-league. And Martin Allen, the name Martin Allen always comes up whenever a Barnet manager gets sacked, doesn't it? I actually sent Trevor a message the other day when Kewell got fired, and I just sent him a picture of Martin Allen with a big cheesy grin. It always comes up, and I think he would never, I don't think he'd ever go back, but I think everyone likes a bit of nostalgia, don't they?
Yeah. Chris, you were going to say something there.
Sorry, Chris.
No. One thing I wanted to put across before is mentioned Stan Collymore, and that would be potentially another Harry Kewell scenario, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What's he going to do? What is he going to literally bring to Southend? Is he just trying to be a bit of a glory hunter and think it's as easy, I'll walk it? Because I'm not being funny. I might be completely wrong here. What management roles has he had?
He hasn't.
Exactly.
He hasn't.
I don't know if I was just sitting there thinking, am I being thick here? But I'm pretty sure he hadn't had any management role. So why would he be able to steer the ship of good old Southend back?
I think it's a whole relatable thing that he's been at Southend. He's done a bit for him. People will buy into it. And I think you get that, like, as Gazza said, with Martin Allen going back. You know, people buy into it. But, you know, that goodwill only lasts so long. You know, Mark. Yeah. You know, Martin burnt bridges every time he left to go and chase the pound note.
Yeah.
You know, but again, every time he came back, he galvanised it. People bought into it. You know, but, you know, with Stan, is he too far detached from when he was at Southend? to be able to actually put anything together now. And I think there's so much friction off, you know, with the supporters and the chairman, the off the pitch stuff, you know, to anyone goes into that, it's an absolute mess, I think. And, you know, you'd be better off staying away from it. But there's managers out there that want to get back in the game.
Yeah, I agree. But talking about getting back in the game, Trevor, since Kiel has gone, is that two wins out of two we've had?
Two wins out of four. So
out of four.
Yeah, two wins, two draws.
So there you go. So you're unbeaten. And this, what do you think about Brent? Do you think he might be asked to step up?
I've had two conversations. Well, I've had more than that, but one conversation said he doesn't want it, wants to go back upstairs and be the head of football. The other one says he wants it. So does the structure then get abandoned again? you know, for him to go back in? Or does it then, you know, end up with a Paul Fairclough, even a Martin Allen type sort of figure that sits upstairs and doesn't want the job? I think, you know, a lot of the issue was, you know, Dean knew he could do the job. He's sitting above Harry Kiel, that's probably in the last chance saloon of managing this country if he doesn't get it right. So I think to have that hanging over him, you know, he needs someone upstairs if he takes it himself, to be able to, you know, not be looking for his job as soon as it goes, you know, belly up. But it's more organised under him. The players seem to know what they're doing. And, you know, we finally won a couple of games. Yay!
Yeah, a long way to go, but an exciting time, I guess, for a fan, because, you know, you've got that opportunity to rebuild and see where the season will end you, you know, where you're going to be. And hopefully you won't be fighting a relegation battle again.
No, I don't think we will. I mean, it's nice at the moment.
Tony Circus is steady a little bit.
Yeah, there's no, the managerial speculation has just disappeared at the moment, which is actually good, because it means they can get out on the training pitch. They're not distracted away from potential this coming in, potential that coming in.
Yeah.
You know, and players are coming back from injury as well. So
yeah,
it's not far away from a full squad either.
No, so exciting times. That's exciting times. A nice little away trip to Dover for you. What was it like down there?
Yeah, it was nice. And Gaz, actually, there wasn't a long trek right the way round to the away end, because they made it an unsegregated game, which is the first time in, I can't remember how many years, I've been to a National League game where it was unsegregated, which...
Trial? Is it a trial for that? Or
I don't know. I mean, the issue was, though, is that it was difficult to work out how many supporters we actually had at the game, because
we all went in
through one turnstile, and obviously... You know, at a normal non-league from step three downwards, you change ends at half-time, don't you? So you had a few people, most of the Bees fans actually stood in what is the away end for the first half, even though we were shooting into the far goal. There were a few Bees fans dotted around there. And same in the seated bit as well. You couldn't tell how many people were Bees fans unless they had a Barnet shirt on.
Now, Trev, seeing from, like, obviously Dover were one of the sort of unfair, in my opinion, succumbents of the COVID generation with their minus, how many was it, 12 they started on, and five or 12 in the fine. I think they're currently on minus 9, am I right? Do you think, for seeing what you saw, is that them dead and buried, or do you think they've still got a chance?
It's extremely, extremely tough for them. I mean, they got wallops at Grimsby a couple of weeks ago. You know, they weren't, I wouldn't say they were really poor at the weekend.
Yeah.
We should have scored another couple of goals. We were a bit selfish rather than squaring balls into the box. But it's, I mean, they've always had trouble attracting players because of where they're, you know, geographically situated. I know when I think Chris Kinnear was in charge going back 15, 20 years ago, they used to train up near Sevenoaks because it was easier for the players to get down from London, and Chris himself, because he was a school teacher up there, and off the M20 to train near there rather than all the way, you know, down to Dover. You know, for them to win three games just to get back to zero, and they haven't picked up a win yet, and then they've got to catch everyone else on top of that. You are asking a heck of a lot, I think.
That's one of the things that I reckon, that if you're aware that Deshaun Golding from Worthing, he had a trial there the whole of the summer pre-season, and surprisingly, we all thought he was gone. but then surprisingly decided to come back to Worthing. Was that because maybe he just got the feel that it's going to be a long, hard season? And yes, he'd be playing National League level for a season, but is it going to be an enjoyable season? And is he just going to end up where possibly Worthing would end up next season? Would you rather be in that level for promotion or relegation?
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I've seen them. I've obviously seen, you know, Deshaun last year, this season as well, when he's popped up playing, and he would probably add a little bit more energy.
Well, if he carries on the way he's been playing as of late, I think we're going to struggle to hold on for him, because I don't think he's a contracted player.
It could be going. I don't know. I mean, it could be, again, the travelling. You've got a lot more, obviously, in the National League. It was part-time as well, so you would have thought it would have been an ideal fit.
Yeah. Any surprises in the National League this last past couple of weeks, or any teams that you're still not surprised to be down there?
A bit surprised at Dagenham. They're having a bit of a torrid run at the moment.
Yeah.
They're really having a struggle. Chesterfield and Grimsby are doing what Chesterfield and Grimsby should be doing. Boreham Wood are outstanding.
Woken have been all right, aren't they, at the moment?
Woken have done well, yeah, really well.
Wellington seems to have cheered up a little bit as well, haven't they?
Who?
Welling down in
They picked up a win at the first win of the weekend. Funny enough, Billericay picked up a win as well after sacking Kevin Watson and Mark Hughes earlier last week. Maidstone have a bit of a blip in the south as well. I saw Brackley have gone top of the north as well above Fylde. So I saw them quite a few years ago in the trophy, and I thought from the moment them when they beat Bromley on penalties, they'd actually push on a little bit further, but they've always been in and around sort of playoff area, but I don't know, maybe this year might be the year they've, you know, given it a push, you know, and they're going to go for it.
Yeah, well, it'll be an interesting couple of weeks till the next one. See what happens with Barnet Saga, what happens with the South End Saga. We'll leave it there and shoot straight up the M1 up to the North and see Chris South Shields, as you say. I think you said it when we were on air. Not the greatest of a couple of weeks for you guys, have you? Did you say 1 point out of nine?
Yeah, 1 point from nine.
A blip, or is there something going wrong, do you think?
I don't think there's anything really going wrong. There's been some key injuries, both fullbacks injured. Thankfully, the left back, the club captain's back, Blair Adams. He was back on Saturday, but clearly not 100% yet. The biggest factor has been the fact that we're not putting chances away and we're not defending set pieces well enough. You know, if you look at our defensive record, it's pretty solid in terms of open play. But set pieces is just the Achilles heel. But the first of the three games is away to Nantwich Town. Nantwich, the home side, put two banks of five. Literally, the game could have been played in one half.
Yeah.
There was no press at all. Shields could bring the ball to halfway and then the press came. So they played very well, Nantwich, and deserved, I guess, a point. But really, really, Shields missed the best two chances of the game, should have scored them and should have got 3 points.
Yeah.
Then on the Tuesday night, go to Bamber Bridge, where we've had a lot of success over the years. They play a good brand of football, an open brand of football. You get a good game on a very good surface. And we were just awful. First half, it was dreadful. It was bad.
Were you at the game?
Yeah, we were commentating.
Yeah. Okay.
At Nantwich and Bamber Bridge. And the first 45 minutes was just a horror show. Defence was all at sea. There was no endeavour. Real lack of lack of desire, and then the selections weren't great, and the setup wasn't great. Second half was better. We were 3-0 down after half an hour, so it was game over. And then the second half finished 0-0. And then on Saturday, I wasn't there. I was at York Races of all places. But having watched the highlights,
Did you put your favourite suit on? Did you have your big hat?
I didn't. No,
disappointing, mate. Disappointing.
Well, very smart, nice jacket, and what have you. But a lot of criticism on social media. But having watched the highlights again, we missed three sitters. If you put those chances away, game's over.
To be honest, mate, you know what? You could probably just change that. Change your accent to a southern one and be exactly what I was like at the end of August, because that's exactly what it sounded like Worthing were being like. You know, we had plenty of chances, not putting them away. And then the games are turned, and then you lose the games because you know we're mainly in a half. And apart from our FA Cup exit, I would say we were the strongest teams in all our losses. Mm-hmm. And it's oh god, isn't it? I mean, from you being a commentator and me doing a co-commentary with Pete at times, it's so hard to stay positive, even if your team are doing all right. But when they're not putting things away, how can you stay positive? I had one of the players come up to me after a game, after the week off, and goes, James, I wanted to wring your neck because you were just so negative. I was like, yeah, but you weren't there. You like, it was just so poor football. Yeah.
It's really difficult, but you know, you win football matches by scoring goals. So you've got to score goals. And if you don't score goals, you're not going to win.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. A lot people asking what plan B is. Plan B, plan A and plan B are both the same. Score goals. And that's it.
And are you still top or
second? You know, I mean, there you go. It's a mad league. Matlock Town, you know, lost at on Saturday to Atherton Collieries, and it was a game where had we won, we would have gained and gone top again. And everyone's going to drop points. All you have to do is look after yourself. Forget other clubs. Forget other results. Yep. Just look after yourself. We've got a big game tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Local rivals, Morpeth Town. We're at home. Bitter rivalry, really, really bitter rivalry. And it's a chance to put right the wrongs of the last three games. And then on Saturday, away to Matlock, first against second.
Yeah.
Huge. You know, 6 points out of six in those. And it's a completely different feel. Totally different dynamic.
Chris, with the size of your crowds, do you segregate or not?
No. I mean, on Saturday, there, you know, nearly 2,150 there on Saturday. Yeah. Were phenomenal. No, there's no... There has been in the past. So, if, for instance... If normally it's done when the two clubs discuss how many away fans you think are going to travel. So we've gone to places like Gainsborough and been segregated because we've taken 500-600. We take that and more to Scarborough, but there's never any segregation to Scarborough. Pretty good. FC United of Manchester, we segregated at our place. They didn't at theirs. When we've had Stockport County, we've had segregation. Warrington Town has been segregation, but it depends on the. It's normally discussed between the two clubs and the various police forces. But we have segregated, but over the last 4 or 5 seasons, not a lot.
Okay, and then to bring it back to something positive as well, can you explain to the listeners Project 4000? Because one of my followers picked up, didn't they, on Twitter about it a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. Project 4000 was a one-off. It was just a spur of the moment thing where suddenly the club realized that so we had two league games and an FA Youth Cup tie, and we needed I think it was 254, something like that, at the FA Youth Cup tie to take the numbers of supporters in the ground in that 7 days to over 4000. And we did it. There was 360, I think. Then another 2,000. I mean, tomorrow night, Morpeth is going to be 20-odd, 22, 23 miles apart. Could be another 2,000. We're getting close to averaging 2,000.
Yeah, it's good.
Crazy, isn't it? Crazy, yeah. Brilliant.
I mean, Morpeth should be a win for you, shouldn't it? Like looking at the table and everything like that.
They're unbeaten in 7. They will come to Shields and spoil. They normally play a pretty brutal brand of football against us. I'm expecting no different tomorrow night. It'll be very, very, very tough. And it's one of those where the old cliche, you have to win the battle.
Yeah.
If you win the battle, let your quality shine through. But Morpeth have got some good players.
Yeah.
They're a good side. They started the season appallingly, but they're unbeaten in 7. So it'll be tough. The first goal is key. If you get the first goal, it's a different game.
Sounds like what Trev was saying at the Bognor game for me, wasn't it? The first goal is going to win this, and it did.
Yeah.
It is. But it should be a good game. It's funny, actually, I meant to say, because if Pete would have been, I'm sure he would have. There was, do you know the listener, Jimmy Paddy, from South Shields? Because he was listening to Pete's commentary of the Worthing game, and he South Shield fan. His username on Mixler was Jimmy Paddy. So, but he said he's a South Shields fan. He was going to give it a listen. So it may have been because he's either listened to this and heard about, like, you know, the commentary that Pete and me do and all that. So I don't know. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Very. I don't know Jimmy Paddy. If he's if he's whatever his Mixler name or his name Jimmy Paddy. I probably will. I may well.
Yeah,
know
you'll have to look at listen to that game up there like that. But we've down south, I think, guys, and you know, the Isthmian League is wide open, the Isthmian Premier right now. And as we sort of said, Bognor, the Worthing's arch rivals, are getting a bit excited down below with because they're second in the league at the moment and they were first for a bit, but not realizing they've got three games in front advance of everyone else. So if everyone around them loses them, beats them, they'll be down back to mid table. But any surprises, chaps, for the Premier Isthmian League division right now? Because I think what's going up there is really what I expected now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Lewis had a good result of the weekend, I think. We won 6-2 away, I think. At, who was it? I can't remember who it was now. Was it
Margate.
I saw they won 6-2. I couldn't remember if it was Hornchurch or Margate. But yeah, they had a decent result of the weekend. They started to put some results together. They won the last three, I think, haven't they?
I think, I think one of the things I am really quite surprised, and I know our ex-PNLP contributor, Johnny JK, he's who I was lucky to see down with work the other day, which was lovely. Caught up some nice barbecue food with him in Texas, which was good to see. But he was saying to me there, he obviously doesn't think Dom Paola will get sacked, but he said he's really surprised with what they've the players they've got this season, why it's not getting together. 5 points out of possible 24. It's not a good start, and they're second from bottom. Just in front of Leatherhead, who have been even poorer with a minus 21 goal ratio with Leatherhead. But Horsham, I think we said it on here before, even to Johnny, do you think they were riding the promotion wave the season they did so well, and maybe they've got back to the level they really will be, a sort of mid-table team, possibly bottom table?
Maybe, but I think, like as Johnny said, though, the players they signed in the summer, you've got the likes of Shamir Fendon, he's played National League football at Aldershot, and I think a couple of others as well. I think he's been at Woking, and now it's dropped down to play at Horsham. You know, you'd expect them to be that little bit of a step up. I think they've recruited well in the 3 years. Yeah, third year now, isn't it, for them at that level, Horsham?
It feels like the first full year. They haven't had a full season.
But their recruitment, from what I've seen, has stepped up one every year. So you know, but then I think this year as well, you know, across the board, everyone's recruitment stepped up one better than it was last year. So I think it maybe doesn't stick out quite so much. But I would expect them to be doing a little bit better than they are. But, you know, we're still only 8 games into the season. We've still got another 32-34 to play.
We are indeed. And Kingstonian still at top, and Worthing play Kingstonian top of the table clash on Wednesday. So I guess, like Chris is saying, it's like it's an exciting, it's not maybe a local derby or there's much of a rivalry there for Kingstonian, but Kingstonian have been surprisingly good this season. They've got 21 points out of possible 27, I think it is. Yeah, 27 points. And it's going to be a big game at that, and I don't like that ground because they share with Crane. Crane beat us a couple of times there already. But yeah, I think it's going to be opening up. I'm interested to see how well Hastings United are doing in the cups. They're obviously in the league below. They don't seem to be doing as well in the league, but I think that's also because they've been had a lot of postponements because of their cup runs. But they're in the fourth qualifying. Yeah, they're in the fourth qualifying now, I think, and that could be in the could it be one of the lowest teams left in the cup if they get through to the first round?
No, Bedfont Sports are at step four, five. So four, so
one below that. What, four is Hastings? Yeah,
I'm sure Bedfont are one lower. Step five.
Possibly, but you know, it's great for non-league. It's great to see. There's a lot of teams still up there, and you know, it's amazing to see some of these teams that are going to be getting up to the league because there will be some shocks up in that first round. And you know, it'd be great to see some of them with a big payday, a big ground with fans this time, which obviously we couldn't see last season with like some arena and stuff. FA Trophy draws have been drawn now. We've got Chertsey, which will be a nice one to go and see. Chertsey away. So hopefully goes out on a Saturday, I think, at the end of the month, Saturday the 30th. Chris, who have you been drawn against in the trophy?
Away to Marine.
Marine, oh, that'd be interesting. So, you know, in Marine Cup, you can go and look play house bingo to see where the balls are going to go in the alongside of that road, which is great to see. I mean, for us, and I guess for all of us on this convo, it's nice to see a bit more of cup action because we've sadly all been knocked out of the FA Cup as well. Yeah, it doesn't pay as well, but I just keep looking at Hornchurch and seeing what they did last season, and you know, it could be anyone.
Absolutely.
Talk about Hornchurch, PNLP favourite. Chris Dixon has left Hornchurch. He's left the building. I texted him and said, oh, I have him behind a move, and he did say it's more because he's driving. He lives in South London anyway, and he's driving up for training and the matches in Hornchurch. And he's obviously got a PT business now, which he spoke about on the podcast last year. And we wish him the very best. I'm disappointed because I know Trev and I did say we'd go and have a little meet with him and a little pint after a game, and that nearly happened last week, but it got postponed due to their cup involvement, which now they're out of. But as I said to Trev, it was interesting because he started that game and the next day involved his left the club. So I was quite surprised because you'd thought they might, if he knew he was leaving, they might have had a little sort of farewell to him because he's done so well for the club. But all the best to him. Erith and Belvedere, Trev, do you know much of them?
Yeah, share with them. Welling. Yeah, Welling, a part of your road. Nice little non-league ground that backs onto the main road.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times with Charlton. Yeah. It's pre-season friendly. It's a nice little ground, nice little crowd there and everything like that. And they've, as you say, Gaz said, Welling are doing all right at the moment. Got a little bit of a rise on, which is good. So, you know, fair play to him. What step are they? They're Kent County League, aren't they, I think?
Yeah.
Step five. He's dropped a couple of downs. So in theory, the way he plays, he should smash it.
Yeah, there's a few players down in that division at the moment. Gary Alexander used to be at Millwall, also at Erith and Belvedere. Then you got Jack Midson at Sheppey. And I think there's one or two other ex-Football League players at Chatham as well. So it's quite a competitive league. Being that much closer to London, though, you get those sorts of players dropping just outside to play for the likes of Erith as well.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It'll be good to see him. We wish him the very best, and maybe we'll have him on again sometime soon if he wins trophies with them or something or some promotion. But anything else in the footballing realm, guys? What weeks have we had? Like sort of any legal surprises? I mean, Pete still went to the Midlands again, still failed to get a Midlands correspondent, which I think would just give up on him. He's too busy having a pint and a beer in a club. He even went to the Southwest to go to Bristol. He didn't come back with a correspondent, so you know, useless Pete. And he doesn't even turn up tonight, does he?
No, it's not one.
Shocking, isn't it? Shocking.
I went and watched Worthing Ladies actually last week. I've watched ladies football in the past, but I've only ever sort of watched England, and I thought I'd drop down and watch sort of the lower levels. And I was not shocked, but because I know Worthing are very good, but I was entertained. They won 6-1. In the Women's FA Cup, and it was really entertaining. I can't say much more other than that, but it was really good. And they had about maybe 100, 150 there, which was really good. And they had a local girls' side all as mascots, so they were all to see collecting the balls when they went out of touch and everything else. But it was a good 6-1 win. And then I did back a little step 7 number again at the weekend, just trying to stay local. But Chris, I got something to ask you. Yeah. Mask United that got knocked you guys out of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
They're having an absolutely barnstorming FA Cup run, aren't they?
They are. I mean, you know, smashed Chester City 4-0 in the replay at Chester.
At Chester, yeah.
I mean, Adam Boyes, the centre forward, he's already passed the 20 goals mark for the season, which is just bizarre. They are a good side. You know, they beat us in pre-season. They beat us in the FA Cup. They're doing well in the league. They're doing well in the cup. They are a good, very good side. And it's no surprise. They've been a good side, a good club for several years. One of my old Mariners podcast colleagues, Terry Wilkinson, lives in Mask, and he's followed them quite closely for a number of years. And they've always played a brand of football that suits them best. Their pitch isn't the best. It's not a pitch where you can go and play silky football, but they utilise what they've got.
They got kicked at the weekend as well, haven't they?
So
fourth qualifying round, which suggests it's probably a fairly winnable game for them.
Absolutely.
The results they've had. I only noticed it because there's a guy I watch that does vlogs on YouTube, and he's doing some work with the FA Cup YouTube channel, and he went to the game against Chester, the home game, so the first leg, like, main game, and then I thought, they're gonna struggle at Chester, and then I saw it was up 4-0.
Incredible. I mean, there was a big kind of post-mortem. The Chester's joint managers, Jono and Bernard from the Salford.
I love that programme. I know some people that love or hate Salford, but that was just such brilliant footballing TV. And it was so much watched, didn't you think?
Yeah, it was. So they are now joint managers at Chester City. And there was a massive post-mortem after the game. Players in the dressing room for 45, 50 minutes afterwards. And then I watched the interview that Jono conducted with the local media, and he spoke very, very well. And they've given a vote of confidence from the board because it's a fan-owned club. So it's completely supporter-owned. So they've had the backing of the fans, really. But for Mask to go to Chester and, you know, and destroy, it's incredible, absolutely incredible. And who's to say they can't go one step further, because they are good, you know, no doubt about it.
Great to see.
They do it. So nice to see a team get them into the first round proper and get them a decent tie against the league side and get a bit of money into the club.
Absolutely.
It's the same. It's same with Horsham, though, isn't it? Really, because, you know, although we do banter with Ian and Johnny when they're on here, like, you know, it's Sussex. It's a Sussex club, and they've got an opportunity to beat Woking, which is a big game as it is anyway, National League club, and that will really test them. And, you know, it's funny that they've been doing much better in the cup than they have in the league. Whether they've been properly tested yet, I don't know, but, you know, if they win that, they're in the first round proper, and, you know, we're going to see some nice little results, and maybe they might see me go to the Horsham game, depends on when it is, if it's at home, and see if we can go and have a little look out there to see who it is. But fair play to them, fair play to the team still in the cup. We do enjoy it. Moving on from the cup and everything like that now, Trevor shared an article in the week, which from some people could look at it, maybe should politics be brought into football, or any political correctness be brought into football, I should say. Lewis, with the call him out scheme. Trev, do you want to sort of summarise what this call him out was, really, and draw your attention to it?
Yeah, I think it goes along, obviously, the lines of what happened with the horrific murder of Sarah Everand.
Yeah,
by the Met police officer and that. And I think, you know, Lewis are all about equality. Their men and their women get paid the same, which is a first throughout the country. So I wouldn't say I'm surprised that they've sort of come out with something, but it popped up on Twitter, you know, during the week. And we had a few conversations across WhatsApp and whatnot about it, as to sort of, like, you know, how you sort of go with it. And he's got the hashtag, you know, call him out. And I'll just read a little bit of what Lewis put out there. From today, this was when they put the statement out. When anyone in the men's team and managers and coaches hears or sees something said or done by a workmate, family member, friend, or anyone that they with that they feel is disrespectful, sexist, or harmful in any way to a woman, whether she's there or not, they will speak to that man and they will hashtag call him out. It might make them feel uncomfortable, but nowhere near as uncomfortable as the woman on the receiving end of the demeaning comment. Now, you can sort of take that across social media, across night out in the pub, you know, anything that goes, really.
Was it Lewis's idea, or is it another? Is it another thing?
I haven't seen it.
I looked at it again tonight when I was doing a bit of research for the pod, and it hasn't really gained traction. There's no replies to it. There's no comments, but there was a couple of comments, and one I wanted to draw to your attention. I don't know if you've seen this. It seems to be from a guy called Ken Adams 77, saying the absolute irony of this when you have Joseph Fiennes at your club, brilliant. And he is the assistant manager or something of Lewis. So there's something going on there. And then Ken has replied going, have a good day, Joseph. Be a good boy on the touchline. Hopefully you've learned from your behaviour. And Joe has replied saying, thanks, Ken. Be good to see you at a game. And Ken's replied, not while you're involved, Joseph. And then Joe goes, stick to armchair politics. Suits you better. Ken, what a guy. Joe, I feel like your obsession with me is dangerous. And then Joe again, unrelated topics, Ken. One is trying to address misogyny and one is abuse to women. The other was an apology for questioning offside. You're clearly a professional troll. Having reviewed your post, you should maybe consider a worthwhile hobby. So something's gone on there, which has caused one fan, no matter what, to call it a bit of irony, which is where it gets me onto the fact is, don't get me wrong, it's a great thing in theory because, you know, the world is changing, as we know. We've got to put it lightly. You know, you can't joke about things we could joke about even 5 years ago now because someone's going to take offence. And, you know, there's always that sort of building site guy, wolf whistling at a woman. I mean, we had comments on there saying, like, you know, for example, I noticed that Page Three was always in the sun all throughout me growing up, but then it was got rid of because women thought it was sort of over-sexualising their bodies. But then I said, quite rightly, that Heat magazine, for example, still has Torso of the Week, where it's a topless man. So, you know what I mean? You look at things like that and they're trying to have an equal playing field, but you can't be sitting there women gawping over a thing, but us lads aren't allowed to go and look at topless women, which is exactly the same. They've just got, their breasts are slightly different. Well, they're not that different from my breasts because mine's a moobs really, but they're still, do you know what I mean? And that, this is where this line, and do you think Lewis as a football club, yeah, and I great that their quality and everything like that is great. I mean, we've had conversations over the years with, like, you know, higher up that women's and men's games are paid so much differently because of sponsorship. The women's game is getting better and better, but you can't have equal pay where it's higher up because of just the sponsorship, and it's going to bankrupt the club. But you look at games like at the weekend, I think the Arsenal game, the women's game was getting over 2,000 people there, and, you know, Man City are often getting a lot of people there. Do you guys think it should be down to a football club to be starting this? And is it just to try and get Lewis a bit of, let's say, sort of get them out there a little bit, get the name out there, people talking about Lewis?
I mean exposure.
Yeah, exposure. Not that kind, because we're going to have to be a bit careful to talk about that exposure when we're talking about this subject.
I don't think any other club could have done it because, you know, there isn't that pay level at the same structure throughout the game that we know of. Lewis are the only club that does it. So, you know, if you're looking towards an equality type thing, which, I guess in a way we are, you couldn't see Man City coming out with it with, you know, players on £200,000 a week. And I've no idea what their ladies are on. I'll hazard a guess at it's, you know, not more than £5,000 a week. You know, you've got absolute disparity there. So, you know, I think fair play to him to coming out, as they put at the bottom of the statement. But, you know, each man will find where his radar is to what he thinks is offensive to what someone else is. And you'll set your own boundaries and your own, you know, parameters. But within that, there are certain things that you just, you know, going back to the Joe Vines bit, I did see what it was all about as well, because I saw it on, because I followed Joe on Twitter. I think they he had a little disagreement, shall we say, with one of the officials' offside decision at the weekend. He said to him that they'll review it on the tape afterwards, and hold his hands up if he was wrong, which is what he did. And he put his apology on Twitter. And for some reason, people are linking it to this call him out statement. But you're looking at two completely different angles here.
Yeah.
What we're actually looking at. And actually, the, you know, the thing with the referee bit with Joe is actually something else that we're going to talk about in a minute anyway.
When it comes to I think the thing is with the call it out thing as well, is that, you know, sexist or not, there are places, you're a woman, do you know the offside rule, or like, you know, things like that, you shout at the linos, the referees, which we will, as you say, talk about. But can a football club, or should a football club, link themselves to such a bold statement when, no matter what, we would have all been at Grand, I'm not even funny, probably said something ourselves, not as so bad, but, you know, there's going to be maybe a sexist comment made, or, you know, something like that, in, maybe in the heat of the moment, or even comments like, they're like handbags over there, you know, clubs frown on that. So are you telling me that Lewis, if they hear someone in the ground, sort of not necessarily making a sex joke, or my grand could play better than you, or like, you know, or something against a woman, is it gonna start a real sort of big, open a big sort of wound there?
I don't know. That's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I would say, again, you know, that last little bit about, as a person, you set your own boundaries,
yeah,
and parameters against what you think is acceptable and what you think isn't. You know, you see how many female physios we have in the game now. Fantastic. You know, they're showing that it's no different to having a male physio in being able to do the job. And probably I'd say in the last 5 years, it's actually grown. I very rarely see a male physio run onto the pitch these days. You know, and, you know, that in itself is a level of respect that those players themselves could quite easily turn that into a situation where that call him out, you know, kind of campaign would be brought to the fore. So,
yeah,
even down to, so at the weekend as well, like, Trev, the England game, it was all female officials. And from what I watched, I didn't watch it all. I think I saw that last 20 minutes. Every decision, there was not one player complaining. There was no shouting in the referee's face. And I think that's it's.
Were they good decisions, or was there some contentious ones?
I think there was decisions where there was no contentious ones, but there were decisions where if it was your team, you'd be narked, and if it was your team, you'd be narked. If it was against your team, you'd probably be happy.
Yeah. But you, like you say, imagine if someone like, you know, Jack Grealish went screaming in the face of the women's referee, that'd be in the front picture of the Sun on Monday. But if it was a bloke, nothing would be done about it. And this is where the thing is, yeah, there needs to be something done about it. But, you know, it's just like, it's saying here in that statement by Lewis, it's like, you play, you've seen what football squads are like. And if you've got a good bunch of lads, you've seen some of the ways they are in the changing rooms or what things they say. Are you telling me that one of them is going to go stop the game and go, hang on a second, why did you say that? Is it going to happen?
No.
I agree with it. I agree that there is some times where things are said, and it's down to males to stop it, because there is over aggression sometimes towards females, and you see it all the time. And I would step in if I saw it. If there was genuine aggression in that, I do agree with what they're saying, that it's got to be down to men to stop the aggression towards women.
Yeah. Chris, you were going to say something.
I just think it's kind of, when you do something like this, it's almost unpoliceable.
Yeah.
It's uncontrollable. It's so open to use, but also misuse. It opens up so many different cans of worms. It's untrue. I think
that's a statement there. It opens up a can of worms.
Yeah, it's like, I believe that I have a fair idea of what is and what isn't acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to race, creed, sex, anything. I think I have a fair grasp of what is and what isn't acceptable.
Yeah.
If everybody lived their lives like that, probably would be roughly okay.
Yeah.
For a club to come out with stuff like this, it's kind of almost unpoliceable.
Mm.
Because in what context is it going to be? If it's like a player or a member of staff in their day-to-day work play, and it's kind of something that really is in everyday life acceptable, but they take offence at it. Is it really offensive? Who's going to be the adjudicator on that?
Mm. It's an interesting topic, and I think we could sit here for hours talking about it. It's interesting. I mean, I'm not surprised it comes from a club like Lewis, because at the end of the day, Lewis are Marmite. People love them, people hate them. I think, you know, they are quite hipster. You know, fair play, they're playing the men's and women's separately. But, you know, to be fair, the women's team's better than the men's team, and they're much higher up in the sort of football pyramid. We had conversations, you know, so it didn't get heated or anything, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's a very touchy subject for a football club to be talking about, and it needs to get support. And it makes me wonder, is it sort of a publicity stunt from Lewis? And if they can police it and be fair play, but as you said, is it going to cause ruptions in, like, you know, groups of lads changing rooms? Because we all know there'll be comments made by lads all the time. You know, you say, I'm sure women gawp at men. If there's a good looking man, they're going to gawp at him. I mean, I have issues with everyday life, mate, when I'm walking down the street and these women wolf whistling at me. And, you know, I mean, Vicky always says to me, you know, they can have you if you want, but, you know, it's one of those things. And it's such a fine line, but it's just the way the world is, the way the world's changing. And, you know, what I wouldn't be surprised to see more of this in the future.
Mm.
It is, and we're gonna have to be very careful. Mm-hmm. It's a subject that, you know, could evoke a thing. But I mean, I guess if you've got any thoughts on it, guys, just tweet at the PNLP on Instagram or our Twitter account and our Facebook pages. So Twitter. I said that. I don't know why I couldn't get my words out there. Twitter. Moving on though, referees incident. We said, as we saw, there's a viral video going around. And Trev, what is it? Bristol Manor Farms manager going absolutely ape at a referee. Now, gents, we watch a lot of non-league football. We watch a lot of football. And some of the referees I've seen already this season, the standard is poor. I mean, but don't get me wrong, I wouldn't like to be in their shoes. I mean, I know Gareth sort of watched an old PNLP contributor referee a game the other week and had an absolute shocker. But it doesn't really surprise me knowing him. We all shout. I mean, the amount of times I've called the ref every name under the sun, my mother would not be proud of the language I used. But I'm sure all three of you have said that as well. We've, you know, shouted at the referee. But this was something else, like to see a manager going and, you know, imagine what that would have been like. You know, that referee's quite on his own, really, with the two liners that looked sort of small as anything. They're not going to stop anything going on. And I know the things, but from manager, I think they're the same. Are they a step four club?
Yeah, I think they are.
Step four club to be behaving like that on the pitch, screaming at a referee's face like that, and it being filmed in this day and age. Surely his job's untenable now.
Yes.
You'd have thought so, wouldn't you?
You think so. And also the people filming it found it extremely funny, which it clearly wasn't.
No.
It was quite disturbing, actually, because the manager was clearly...
Them getting knocked out of the trophy, wasn't it? I think so. Yeah. It must be step four. They're being knocked out of the trophy.
Well, wouldn't they?
And, but the thing that concerns me is doing some research for the pod tonight, and there's no statement, there's no note or anything from the account, just the result from Saturday, and that was it. Now, a lot of non-league clubs aren't going to have a PR team, but if that was a professional club like that, and you know, obviously, was he sent off because he got carded, or he was sent off or something like that, or what was the cause of the argument? Does anyone actually know?
No, I don't know. I think it was just seeing the video. It took me a while to find the video. But all you just see is just something you just think, you know, like you say, we've all had our fair gripes with referees over various games, various decisions and everything like that. But you've almost got to be just so careful, because you've got someone filming that. If that person hadn't been, you know, there were no mobile phones around, you might have had an FA charge coming your way. But, you know, that would be a little bit swept under the carpet. But that's out there in the public eye, It's everywhere, you know, and for them not to come out with anything is unbelievable.
It's had 148,000 views.
Wow.
Yeah. So what normally happens is, what I've seen is when these videos, so for instance, when say something extraordinary happens in a football match, maybe non-league, and it's something, you know, I don't know, like an extraordinary goal or just something that's really special, it normally ends up on something like Sky Sports News roughly about a week later.
Yeah.
By the time it gets through the social media platforms, gets through the various steps. So it'll be interesting to see if it ends up in the real public domain. Very interesting.
That's the kind of thing on Soccer AM on a Saturday, isn't it? On a Saturday.
Yeah, you often see, I think Worthing have been on there before on Soccer AM and stuff, or, you know, just saying. I mean, I was quite pleased last season in the FA Cup when I think it was Jesse Starkey's free kick against East Grinstead. I filmed it for RebelYell.live and put it on our Twitter account. Didn't even tag the FA Cup, and it just said FA Cup round, qualifying round one or whatever it was to round two. And it was retweeted and actually fully tweeted out by the FA Cup. It had like hundreds of thousands of views. So it just shows how quick something can be shared around, Trev.
I think as well that goes, you know, that one incident with the referee is something that's actually replicated far more often than people realise. I stumbled on this morning, just reading something on one of a Kentish football website, that the Kent Youth League itself, which has been going for, I think, about 20, 30 odd years, are actually talking of packing it all up completely. Two experienced referees yesterday have decided they no longer want to officiate in the league because of the abuse they're getting from
parents
and coaches. You know, and for a league to turn around, they said they can't do anything. Their hands are tied. They have to rely on the FA to sort these things out at youth level. They're not allowed to go ahead and do anything. You know, no referees, no games. It's quite simple. And, you know, we all have disagreements. We all think, you know, we can do a better job than them. And, you know, granted, I quite happily put my hands up and say, I'm not interested in doing it. My dad used to referee for a number of years back in the 60s and again at youth football level when I played.
So you can put your hands down now.
Yeah. I wouldn't dream of ever picking up a whistle. Never.
I think the thing is, but I've seen it on Twitter and I've seen like leagues saying they're struggling to get referees because no one wants to do it now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, imagine if you're a Sunday league referee or something like that. You're doing it because you love the game. You want to add a little bit of pocket money or something like that. You're out there refereeing and you get headbutted or you get like shouted at. And, you know, some of these, I mean, I'm not being harsh, but we know some of these referees maybe aren't the most like, what's it, popular. It's hard, but, you know, they might have, I've seen some that have got like learning difficulties, but they do it to try and get confidence. I see some that have got, you know, that they maybe weren't very popular at school. They're quite shy and they're doing it to get confidence. But if you have someone like that, that goes and referees a game that might be lacking in confidence, is doing it to get their own, you know, mental health problems and stuff like that, and you get some big burly guy with a belly shouting at your face, headbutting you, punching you, it's going to make you 10 times worse. And it's not a place in the game for it. You know, I sometimes think, well, you know, I've never been verbally physical or anything to a referee, obviously. I mean, don't think, but, you know, you think some of the comments you hear at grounds and stuff, it's just, it does affect them. And like when you see that, God knows what he was feeling. And could that guy be scared away from refereeing?
Yeah. A few years ago, so I'm talking maybe 5 or 6 years ago, my dad used to coach an under 14 side. And I actually ran the line for them. And even at under 14s, I was getting abuse from the players running the line. Now, I'm a big guy. They're under 14s. They're almost getting to a point where they're fully grown. They're very quick. But I was getting abuse for volunteering to run the line. So I decided, nah, not doing that anymore.
What were that about your size?
Just saying, oh, you can't keep up. And what sort of decision was that? Obviously, there was other words used in this, even at under 14s level from the players. Most of the parents are okay for the most part, but even if it's happened at that young age, that's just going to escalate all the way through, isn't it?
But this is where coaches and clubs that run these academies and games need to be teaching them to stop this behaviour. Yeah. It's very hard because of the mentality it's in at the moment. And, you know, it just seems to get worse. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day when I was at school. I honestly don't remember using as foul language as you hear nowadays.
No. I agree with you. I think about that video, what's more worrying is that if you go and play the video on, one of the committee members actually runs onto the pitch to have a go at the referee and officials as well.
Oh, really?
In the heat of the moment, I mean, there was over-aggression in that video. But in the heat of the moment, a manager having a go at a referee because he's just been sent off. I'm not going to condone what they're doing, but you can understand they're frustrated and they're angry.
Yeah.
They should just walk away, but you can understand it. But for a committee member to be running onto the pitch to berate the referee the way he does and get right up in his face, that's not acceptable in any way, shape or form, in my opinion.
I think, though, it all comes from the very top of the game, though. You watch them in the Premier League, the way they are around referees, what they're allowed to get away with saying to them and things like that. And yet, you go and watch, you know, you watch, as Gaz said, the England game the other night, three female officials, no one went near them to complain. You watch a game of rugby, you watch a game of the NFL, the players don't go and get in the referees' faces. They don't do that. Why they allow it in the Premier League, and everyone sees that, so they see that as a normal behaviour. That translates all the way down to youth football.
Was it last season or the season before the National League trialled sin bins?
No, it was step five, and then it went step
so
five and
whatever happened to that? Because, you know, I think that's what they do in rugby. And, you know, would this back out the behaviour? You know,
it's still there for dissent. They should be using it this year. Last year, which was the second season, which obviously most teams only played about no more than about 13 games, it seemed to be forgotten about. And there was a couple of games, I think, we went to, Gaz, last year, where the referee should have given them a yellow card and put them in the sin bin for 10 minutes. Instead of actually giving them a physical booking.
I did see it a couple of weeks ago at Littlehampton United in the Step 7 game that our old friend was refereeing, and he did send someone to the sin bin.
Oh, what a surprise. I bet he loves that.
The guy did deserve it. I mean, probably deserved the yellow card. I think he ended up getting sent off, the guy, in the end.
Yeah.
But I think the sin bins are a good idea. But does it? It almost takes them out of the game for 10 minutes to give them a chance to cool off.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. So that's probably
designed to punish the team there and then, isn't it? Rather than you know, you pick up a yellow card, well, that's great. You've got another four to pick up before you get a one match ban. That doesn't hurt anybody.
How good is it for the TV? Like you see it in the ice hockey and in the NHL, and they go like power play 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Imagine having that.
I mean, I've seen. I think not last year, the year before when they brought it in. Yeah. There was one, I can't remember which game I went to, but a side ended up playing with nine because two ended up in the sin bin. And one of those players, it was in the last 10 minutes, so he didn't appear again the rest of the game. The other guy came back on because his sin bin started before then. But you're going to be playing with 10 at least for the remainder of the game. It's stupidity. But again, all comes from the top because they get away with it. They think they can get away with it down at the lower level. You sin bin them, you're penalising your own team straight away, you know, and quite rightly, everyone should give you a good mouthful in the changing rooms after, especially if you've cost the team, you know, a couple of goals or whatever as well.
100%. 100%. It will be interesting to see what happens to Bristol. What was it again? Bristol
Manor Farm.
Bristol Allen, what farm?
Manor.
Bristol Manor Farm. See what happens down there, Manor. If in regards to these people like that. But guys, that sort of rounds off quite nicely episode 22 of the podcast. Trevor has got his hand up. Have you got something to add?
I've got one shout out.
Oh, because Pete's not here because he can't
Pete's
be bothered. What's your
one?
Shout out?
Guernsey, back in action for the first time in over a year.
Yeah.
And they're in the Southern League this year. 911 turned up to watch them win 3-1 over Sutton Common Rovers. They played 1-1, drawn 0, lost 0.
Nice. But isn't it nice, guys, that we can now start to, you know, obviously you guys know my job is in travel and, you know, we've all been affected, whatever, with COVID. But isn't it nice to see that, fingers crossed, hopefully we are really sort of beginning at the end now, because it does certainly feel like that with the red list going down to just 7 countries, pretty much only one of them that people go to in the Dom Rep, because I've never heard of half the other countries that are on the red list or why anyone would go there. But, you know, isn't it great to see? And, you know, people are starting to go on holiday again. They're starting to travel. You're seeing stadiums full, apart from Man City, can't sell out. You are seeing, you know, crowds back at games as good. Yeah, COVID's still here, but, you know, people finally, I never had much faith that we'd be starting to live with it, but it seems that we really are. So long may it continue. Obviously, a stupid fuel frenzy nearly took us off the rails, but I'm glad that we're not still talking about that, because there are still the odd petrol stations that are out of stock around by us, but only the sort of smaller ones. And you also see the fuel has gone up in price, which is frustrating. It's some places nearly starting to get to that high we had about, what, 5-6 years ago. Fingers crossed that goes away soon. But it's nice to get some football in. And gents, any much football you got? Obviously, you got the big game against Morpeth tomorrow, Chris. And Trev and Gaz, what have you got planned over the next couple of weeks?
I think we go step 5 tomorrow, I think.
No, 6.
Step 6.
Who's that?
Wigan Arundel.
Wigan Arundel tomorrow.
Local derby.
Yeah, that'd be good. And I'm sure you'll be going to Barnet because the Glory Hunters only stepping on the train when they're doing well up there. Is it away trips? And when they're winning, and they'll start slating them when they lose again. But, you know, it's glad to see you. Are you going to any Barnet games in a couple of weeks?
No, we've got the girls this weekend, so I'm not going. I could go the following week, but we're playing Wrexham. To be quite honest, I don't fancy us winning that one. So,
yeah. And I was thinking, guys, maybe we need to start thinking about getting this little northern visit together in the next few months and start planning and saving those coppers to see if we can get a nice little visit maybe in the new year. Yeah. No, it's all about a night in a tune. Yeah, Chris can lead us astray.
You don't need a night in the tune to be led astray up here.
I can imagine the pub in South Shore would be pretty good.
Yeah, it's got some good pubs. The town centre isn't what it used to be, but yeah, we can provide some good entertainment. And if we wait until the new stand's complete, you'll be able to see the fully renovated, you know, the fully
When's that meant to sort of be done?
Well, it was supposed to be done by now, but obviously with COVID, with supplies and everything. Potentially the seats ready end October, probably looking at I would say we're fully up seating wise operational before Christmas, without a doubt. But the bars, the new bars and the new executive boxes, you know, into the new year, I'd guess, but it's getting there.
I think a new year visit, us too, because Pete will probably be too busy watching Worthing. He wouldn't want to miss his beloved Worthing for a game, but we'll have to sort of have a little play. Well, you never know. It could be FA Trophy, South Shields versus Worthing. Wouldn't that be perfect?
Well, it would be, wouldn't it?
It would, but we'll have to start.
Big game, Saturday the 29th of January. Home to Matlock Town.
That's a big game. Let's have a little think. Maybe we can try and bid for that off or something with work, which would be really good. But we got plenty of time to save our copper. So Trev, get those flex shifts in, uprated, and Gaz, keep yourself straight. I'll stop spending my money abroad and we'll sort something out very soon. But anyone else got anything to add before we wrap this episode up? It's 2 of the Premier Non League podcast. Yes, Chris?
Very quickly, going on about the crowds in the Northern League. Step 6, I think. Newcastle Blue Star, big name of old, on the up again, like a Phoenix club, over 900 there on Friday night.
Wow.
So it's across the board, we're getting these crowds, which is magic, it really is.
And disillusionment of football, I think, all around, which, so it's great to see, guys. So long may it continue. I'm sure we'll have plenty more to speak to in a couple of weeks, but myself, James, Chris, Gaz and Trev, I wish you adieu.
Mom Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.